Welcome to the Creative Empire Podcast. Each week, Raina Pomeroy, the life and biz success coach, and Christina Scalera, the attorney for creatives, are taking you up close and personal with successful influencers in the creative community and tackling your biggest business hurdles. Their mission is to help you, creative entrepreneurs, think beyond your daily biz so you can make the brave decisions that build your creative empire.
Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Creative Empire Podcast. It's a jam session, but also Christina is in the expert seat today. We are talking about some of the legal stuff that might come up in your business. We've talked about some of them, but maybe with a little bit of a spin. So today we're talking about what happens if somebody steals, or in Christina's language, there's extreme inspiration that happens. What to do when you're thinking about, should I be trademarking something or not? And how to potentially close your business. So Christina, you're in the hot seat today. We're excited to talk to you about all these legal things and things that just happen kind of in the daily business life of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think all of these things are super relevant right now. I've been seeing lots of questions and people talking about this. So, and a lot of people that aren't starting their business because they are afraid that they're going to get ripped off, which I will just say right off the bat is the worst reason not to start your business. It is so hard to get eyeballs on your stuff that just get out there. But if you have gotten out there with a great product or a great service or a new and interesting way of delivering your offering that nobody else is doing, and you suddenly find yourself in the role of someone who is looking at copycats popping up left and right, and you're almost like, am I about to start playing this game of whack-a-mole, or what do I do? You know, so it's a really hard position to be in. You know, you see it or a friend sends it to you. They're like, hey, is this your stuff? And you're like, that is not my stuff. Or, you know, even you're just kind of maybe doing some market research or working on your business, and somehow you come across someone who is clearly inspired by what you are doing. It can be a really big, like just total punch to the gut feeling. So if that is you, or if you're scared that that could be you, I think it's a great idea to keep listening to this episode, where we're going to dive into how to prevent something like that from happening and also what to do when it does happen.
Yeah. So let me just give you a scenario, and maybe we can talk through what this person should have done or should be doing or consider, I guess. So I had somebody come to me, and clearly I'm not an attorney, so I was not advising her. But what happens if somebody comes to you and says, I have this product, it's a physical product and looks a certain way. There's nothing in our market that looks like this. And somebody befriended me a few months ago and said they were interested in my product. Can I send them, you know, a product? You do. And then this other person starts to create a product that looks almost identical to yours. Maybe the color's a little bit different, or the font's a little bit different, but the physical product looks almost identical and the copy on it is almost identical. And also the photography that they took is also really similar to yours. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, it's not a identical replication, but it's close enough that it would be, you know, pretty similar enough that your audience might be confused as to whether or not it's your product. What should they do?
Yeah, that's the situation that it feels so crappy. And I mean, I just want to talk for a second, because this has happened twice to me, and I can't even tell you how betrayed I felt and like how much it made me doubt myself and my abilities. It ended up falling back. So I, like, if you're there, I've been in your shoes twice. And one was with a stranger. She didn't know me. I didn't know her. So it's fine. But then the other one was someone that I was actively mentoring under the guise of basically false pretenses, under the guise of something else. So if this is happening, one of my friends, she told our mastermind, like, if you're mentoring someone, make sure you are charging a butt ton of money, because it is very likely that if you are mentoring someone, at some point, if you mentor enough people, you are going to mentor someone into your shoes. And what I mean by that is, in this world of community over competition, one of your clients is going to take it too far. And so whether it's somebody that you know or it's a stranger, like I said, it can feel really icky. It can just feel like you're being betrayed. And you can talk more, Raina, about like the mental aspects of how to deal with this. I would love to get your perspective on that. But what it came down to for me with these two people that did this to me, and then watching this with some of my clients, is something that you guys have heard a lot about on this show and others, which is brand building. And brand building looks like a couple of different things. It looks like securing your intellectual property from a legal perspective. It looks like engaging a community, which Raina is a genius at. It looks like developing a unique value proposition that you consistently deliver to the marketplace that you get known for. So a good brand example of this is Away Bags. They are known for having amazing customer service. You can literally go buy a suitcase pretty much anywhere these days. You can buy it at Target. You can buy it at Tuesday's Mornings. You can buy it at Macy's, Nordstrom, like wherever you want to go. You can buy it at the airport. But there's a reason why Away Bags is doing so well and has such a huge following. And it's because of their customer service and maybe their battery pop-out thing. But like really, it's their customer service. So I think brand building is a critical component to developing a brand that is so strong, it can no longer be ripped off. And even if when it is, because I almost said if, but when, when that brand does get ripped off, it's not going to matter. So even though I was devastated when these two newcomers came along and popped up and they had sites that looked just like mine and product descriptions that, you know, every third word was changed, I was really upset at first. And the way that it's played out in the year and a half since they've existed and I've watched them grow versus our growth, which to be totally honest, I try not to watch them. But the way that it's played out is that they are copying me from like 6 to 8 months ago, because what I'm working on right now in my business is like projects and things that you guys are going to see in like 6 to 8 months from now. So, you know, we're pivoting faster than they can keep up with our development, which is part of our brand. Like we are always out there, we're always innovating. And if somebody is copying you, or, you know, if you're the copier, like if you're out there copying someone, looking to someone else for inspiration, you're always going to be sitting behind. And so it can be a really bad place to be in. And so I've kind of stopped worrying about people like this, one, because of the brand, two, because of the intellectual property I've been able to secure for my business. And we'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. And then also, just the fact that I'm an innovator and I'm owning that, and I'm not going to look at them or what they're doing and like get stuck in that sinkhole, because what they're doing, what they're copying from me, like I said, is just so old to me at this point that it's like, oh, wow, that was something like I was designing images like that for my blog a year ago, and they're just now getting to that, because that's how long it takes someone to catch up. They can't see the inside of your business, and therefore they can't catch up to where you're at.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that what's really interesting about this is that you are allowed to be pissed off, right? And you're allowed to be upset by somebody ripping you off. You put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this project, whatever it is, whether it's somebody plagiarizing your website copy or a product or whatever, you're allowed to be upset because that's hard work that you put in and somebody is trying to take a shortcut. But I think what Christina is trying to say is that that shortcut isn't going to get them places because they are clearly not an innovator, right? And it's going to stop you as this copier from really seeing the kind of success that you might want to. And maybe people are just not cut out to be entrepreneurs, like truly. But if you're copying, just like I would say, keep your blinders on and come up with cool ideas because you are capable of that. And, you know, I often think to myself, like, do people just not understand that they're like at in the wrong here? So like, that's kind of like where my brain goes.
That's actually a great point.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, do you just not see that you are like blatantly copying? If you were sitting in the other person's seat, would you not see that this is like a blatant copy of like extreme inspiration, as you say, right? So I just think it's so healthy for us as entrepreneurs to put those blinders on so we're not seeing anything that looks even remotely like it. So I went like a little bit aside, but I went on a retreat with my mentors and they gave me like basically a full template of what they do. And I was like, I'm so cognizant of not copying their stuff. I do not want their sales page to sound like my sales page, like any of that. So I basically looked at their template and every section I wrote, I looked at like the format and the outline and kind of took notes on it without writing any of their words, closed that document down, and then wrote my own thing. And I looked back to make sure that my copy was not sounding the same. I didn't pick up on a phrase that they used and really was super cognizant about that. You kind of have to be that vigilant in order to not rip somebody off. off because nothing is truly unique anymore, right? But Christina, to kind of get back to the legal side of it, if somebody was being copied, what is like a legal action or like an official action they can take to shut something down if that's something that they need to do? I know you said like build the brand, but that's kind of like a thing that they have to continually do. And that's a more progressive thing rather than a reactive thing. So what do you suggest in terms of like when something happens, when do you need to take action?
Yes. So one of the ways that you can protect yourself legally is by getting your intellectual property secured. And don't let that big fancy phrase scare you off, because you guys are already dealing with, I'm going to call it IP. You guys are already dealing with IP every day. And so if you have a website and you have a domain name and someone goes to your website and they see a logo of some sort, even if it's just font or, you know, it just says your name or whatever, they start to engage with your brand at that point. So maybe you've hired a designer, you have a whole brand suite, you have like, you know, submarks and logos and fonts and colors, and that's awesome. But even for those of you who are just getting started and literally opened up like a Google Doc template and typed in your name in like a pretty font, which, you know, choose one of the 24 Google has, but and took a screenshot and uploaded it to your site, like if that's all you have, that's where your brand starts and that's where your IP starts as well. And so when we're dealing with IP and protecting people, there's two things that I'm looking at as a business owner and then as an attorney too. So do we have a trademark? And trademarks are based on use. So this could be something that's like a common law mark that you've been using, but you haven't applied for a registration yet. So it doesn't mean that by default, you have absolute rights to be using this name out in the public. It just means that you have some sort of use out in the public. Whether that's infringing or not is to be determined later. So that's a trademark. All it does is identify the source of where people are purchasing their products or services from. So if they go to your website and they have another tab open with a different service provider, so let's say I'm in Denver and I'm looking for a photographer, I can easily tell those websites apart by looking at the logo that's in the upper left-hand corner of the top of the screen. And I know that I'm immediately on a different photographer's website when I flip between those tabs. So that's your trademark. It just identifies that you are a service provider or a product provider of some kind of product and that people are looking at your stuff when they see that logo or that name on the page that they are looking at. So you can get that registered, and that's super helpful because if somebody comes along and they have the same name, it sounds like yours or it looks like yours. You can also register a logo. So if it looks like your logo, they could potentially be infringing your trademark. And so they don't have to have a registration and you don't have to have a registration either, but it's a lot easier if you do. So when these competitors pop up and they are just a little too close to your name or your logo, you have the ability then to actually reach out and take some kind of legal recourse, which is getting them to change their name or, you know, redesign their logo or something like that, so that people are no longer confused between your offerings and this other new person who's copying you their offerings.
Yeah. So you are basically protected a little bit. Is that what you were saying with the common law situation?
You are protected in your foreseeable zone of expansion. So on the internet, it's really difficult and there's not really good case law, not to get like too technical, but on where this like foreseeable zone of expansion is. But, you know, this was a lot easier back in the day with like mom and pop shops, right? So if you have the name Christina's Rhododendron Wedding Planning Service in like Maine, the foreseeable zone of expansion is probably, you know, Vermont, New Jersey, New York. Now that we've moved that online, it's really hard to tell, but most indicators show that your foreseeable zone of expansion, where you have rights to use that name and where somebody, if they came in, they would be infringing you, would be where people are making purchases from. So for example, if no one's purchasing from you in Montana, then somebody could open up in Montana, you know, Christina's Rhododendron Wedding Planning Services or something. So that's what we're looking at here if you have a common law mark. Now, when you register your mark, you have what's called constructive use throughout the entire United States. And constructive use means that nobody literally gets a letter in their mail that says, hey, this is a registered trademark now, just thought you should know. But if they were to look it up in the international database, the USPTO.gov website, the Trademark Electronic Search System, you guys have probably heard me talk about that before, TESS. If they were to look it up, they would see that there's either a pending registration or a registration for that exact trademark. And so then hopefully the competitor would see that and say, well, I can't use that name or a name that looks or sounds like it, or that logo or a logo that looks and sounds like it. So hopefully they would be deterred and come up with something different enough so that people wouldn't be confused between the two of you. And if they don't, and people are confused, that's a really good indicator that maybe an attorney needs to get involved and you need to send them some kind of letter based on what that attorney tells you to do. Tell them to change their logo or change their name because you're in the right and they're costing you sales or they're confusing your customers or they're otherwise just kind of like treading on your territory. So that's definitely one remedy that's available, but that's not exactly going to cover what you're talking about here with like the pictures that are done in the same style or even like the products that are the same kind of core product, but the design has been changed. And so for that kind of thing, there is no intellectual property protection for ideas. It's just ideas are just not protected by trademark or copyright until, you know, they're fixed in some kind of medium. And so what that means is that if somebody were literally to take a screenshot of your, and this has happened to my clients, if someone takes a screenshot of your product photos and they upload them to their site, that's copyright infringement. Now, the idea to like style a planner with like some ribbon and some shoes, and like even if you use all the same props, but you take that photo in a slightly different way, it's likely not copyright infringement. And so it's really frustrating for business owners because they're like, I just spent all this money or all this time organizing this photo shoot and getting these product photos or getting these photos of me or whatever. And you upload them onto your site. And then, you know, 3 months later, you see them on a competitor site or this copycat site. And they're just slightly different enough that, and this is the problem I was running into with the people that copied me. Things were just slightly different enough to the point where it wasn't enough for me to allege copyright infringement. It was just really crappy on their part.
Wow. Yeah. So there's not a whole lot of like legal recourse that you can suggest for somebody who's having their stuff copied, but it's not like an exact replica.
I mean, you could if you wanted to, if you had a lot of money, or I mean, there's certainly attorneys that would be happy to take this work on for you. But when people come to me and it's like, I pretty much don't take on any copyright issues unless it's like a copy paste from their blog post or their course, you know, or sometimes like we often find clients' courses popping up on like foreign, I don't know if you guys have seen this at all, but there's like these foreign discount sites for online courses. So what happens is people will go in and they will purchase, say, one of my clients' courses, online courses, and they will like verbatim download the teaching videos, copy paste the workbooks, download the workbooks, and they will re-upload them to this third party foreign site, and they will sell that. And unfortunately, I just like can't remember any off the top of my head, but I see them every once in a while. So if you do come across that, know that that does happen. That's not like an isolated incident, and it's just basically, as attorneys, we're playing this game of whack-a-mole because as soon as you get one site shut down, another one will pop up and they'll re-upload the stuff to that site. So,
yeah. When you're in this kind of situation and it's just absolutely frustrating and you feel like there's something that you can do, but maybe not as like a civilian, when do you decide when to talk to an attorney and like what does that actually look like?
A lot of attorneys have free consultations. I just got rid of my free consultation because I was just inundated and had too much on my plate. But, you know, whether you decide to pay for a consultation just for that peace of mind that you're doing all you can, or you decide to find an attorney who still has a free consultation, I think it's a really good idea to at least show them what's happening and get their, you know, get their feelers on the situation so that they can tell you like, yeah, this is something that I could help you out with. Or, you know, this is a situation where they're highly inspired, what I call extreme inspiration. They're deriving some extreme inspiration from you or your products or site or offerings, but they're not like de facto copying you exactly, or, you know, their trademark isn't almost exactly like yours or sounding like yours. The attorney will be able to tell you that and you'll know because they'll either want to work with you and take this on or they won't. And oftentimes with copyright stuff, I'll take it on a contingency, which is like super rare and most attorneys don't do that. But it's because we can recover so much money for our clients where we find their pictures popping up on other people's portfolios. So for example, I have a client who is, she's very famous in her industry, and she had somebody that they like right-click saved her images and uploaded them to their own portfolio as their own images.
Oh, dear Lord. Please,
it happens all the time though.
No, don't do it.
And so we sent them an invoice and kind of a, not like an, I'm never nasty, but I sent them a very strongly worded letter and told them they needed to pay the invoice by this date. And by the end of the day, she had a couple $1,000s in her bank account. So that was pretty cool. And that happens, I don't want to say like regularly where we'll be able to do that for a client, but definitely when it's like a screenshot or a right-click save instance or like a copy paste of a blog or a course content or something like that. Those are the ones that I will take all day long. But it's the ones where, like I said, it's just that extreme inspiration that it starts to get really super fact-based. Like, did they copy this or that? And that's where you need an attorney to come in and tell you, yeah, this is something that we could pursue for you. Here's how much I think it's going to cost, or I can do it on contingency or whatever, versus like the attorney who will look at it, and they'll also, you'll also have attorneys that look at it and say things like, this is just, this is too much of a risk, basically. So they've changed enough that it's different, but it's just, it's like, even though it feels so close to you, the attorney through their lens is looking at it and saying, it's not quite similar enough for me to take this on without, you know, it being a risk for you or a substantial cost or something like that.
Got it. Okay, cool. This is super helpful. And like, if you're in a place where this kind of thing is happening or you're concerned about it happening, that there are attorneys out there who can do free consults or a mini paid consult before they start working with you. So that's definitely a more affordable option than like going all out and hiring somebody immediately. So,
and I think people get into a lot of trouble because they're just like, I'm in the right, and you know, they're in the wrong, and mm-hmm. I'm just going to send them a mean, nasty letter, like on Etsy or via email or whatever. And that's where people start to get into trouble, or they file a DMCA takedown notice without talking to an attorney first, or they, you know, write a letter to someone and they're like, my dad's an attorney and you're going to, you know, you need to take this down and blah, blah, blah. Or on Etsy or like a related shopping platform like that, they're filing some kind of like, you can take someone's listing down if it's copying yours, they're filing that. So those are all things that I think you need to get an attorney's eyes on before you initiate that kind of action. Because what can happen is you can get yourself into a lot of trouble. I had a client that did this earlier. She actually got into trouble twice on different platforms doing this. And she was entirely in the right. She had been completely ripped off in both of these situations. And she filed a takedown notice with, one was with Etsy and one was with a different large kind of like third party seller site. So these are two separate occasions, like months apart. And each time, like, she just got really unlucky. And like the first time somebody, like the seller was an attorney and her boyfriend was an attorney, and you know, they just made a big stink about it and they were completely in the wrong. But just because you're right doesn't mean that you're not going to have to pay to respond to all these people or pay legal fees or something like that, because people can really kick and make a big fuss and it ends up costing you money. So that was a hard lesson for her to learn. But then it happened again. And this time it was with like a slightly larger party that was more of a company. So when that happened, we ended up getting into like a month's long kind of like dispute resolution process because of this one, like just takedown notice on a very common, easy to use, like super easy submission process. Just, hey, this is copying me, please take it down. They took it down. And then this other party got really upset. And even though she was in the right, my client, we still had to go through this months long dispute resolution, which obviously was very expensive. So I think it's really, I mean, I know it can sound scary and it can sound like a huge upfront cost to pay like a $350 an hour, you know, retainer fee, or like I think my consults are like $250 or $350 now. So I know that can sound like really expensive, but when you compare that to the potential of it costing you $10,000+, which is what this client ended up paying, I think the risk is not worth that amount. For me, I would rather just pay the upfront and like get definitive advice from some kind of attorney that like, yes, this is a good idea, I'll help you with this, or no, this is a bad idea, I can't help you with this, or, you know, like they just don't take on your matter. And so if they're not taking on your matter, that's a really good sign that maybe you should proceed with things.
Yeah.
Or that it's going to cost a lot of money.
Ugh, that sounds like a heavy load to carry. I mean, this is like all good stuff. And at some point in our businesses, we're going to run across some part of this. And One of the things that we had talked about that we wanted to cover in this episode was closing your business, which is not something that most people starting their businesses necessarily think about. It's kind of like talking about a prenuptial agreement when you're getting married. But I think it's something to always think about. And it's come across like my mind and like just in terms of conversation at a couple different points in my business. What is the exit plan? And it's interesting because to me, an exit plan feels like you don't think you're going to make it, so you have to create an exit plan. But I think it's also like, it also takes a perspective of like, you should know what is possible for you if you do decide to exit. So I wanted to talk a little bit about closing your business and what legal considerations there are, Christina. And I know one of the things you said was like trademarking is an important part. So can you talk a little bit about what people should be considering while they're growing their businesses, while they're, you know, building their empires, about what it looks like to close a business?
Yeah. And by closing, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, bankruptcy sale, doors are closed forever. Sometimes it just means selling your business because it's no longer something you're focusing on. So for example, my Shopify coach, Kurt Elster, he has the unofficial Shopify podcast, but he had this website called calmingmanatee.com, which was, it's like, it went viral. I think it was on
this is hysterical.
And like, yeah. So it's like, just literally memes that he made with a partner about like manatees, and it was just calmingmanatee.com. And when he started to get deeper and deeper into Shopify consulting, he was like, why do I have this website? You know, like, this has kind of taken on a life of its own. We've gone viral. You know, it's getting like, it got some like crazy amount of page views every month, like 200,000 or something. So they put some ads on there and they were making a bunch of money every month. But at the same time, you know, it's like, why am I running a calmingmanatee.com site when like my main focus is consulting for Shopify sites? So, you know, for him, it didn't make sense to keep running both. And I think he just sold it. And I just asked him before this episode went live, like where you can sell your website, because I think a lot of people don't know that you can sell a website. So you can buy and sell websites and shops and services and businesses. So if you're like, if this is news to you and you're like, I don't know what to do for a living, you can go to these marketplaces and find something that has been working for someone, but they're getting out for some reason. Either they just had a kid and they don't want to do their business anymore. They're a full-time mom now. Or, you know, it's like Kurt, where he's like, why am I running calmingmanatee.com? Or, you know, I've had a couple clients who have come to me, and they've come to me because they're like, we want to wrap this business up in the right way and try to sell it for whatever it's worth. You know, we poured all this money and time into it, and we just haven't seen the return on it that we'd like. And so now it's time for us to leave because, you know, we gave it a good shot, but it's not working for us. Maybe it'll work for someone else. So you can go to websites like flippa.com, F-L-I-P-P-A.com. Exchangemarketplace.com is another one. I think digitalexits.com. It's funny, I actually met Jock at, like, he runs Digital Exits. I met him at a conference with Chris Guillebeau in 2014. And then there's like, oh, I think it's Empire Flippers. But between you and I, audience, I haven't heard amazing things about that business. I have not personally interacted with them or worked with them or used them or anything like that, but just on the down low. So anyway, those are four websites that you could go to either look to buy or sell a business, an online business, just like, you know, a brick and mortar or something like that. So that's the first thing that I just wanted to put out there for you guys. But, you know, let's say that you just want to close, or that you want to, you want to get this ready for sale. If you just want to close, there's not much you have to do. Like, things will naturally expire. You know, make sure that your automatic billing is turned off for all your software. I think it's a generous and nice thing to do to the people who have supported you, to just let them know what is happening rather than just like disappearing and people are like, what happened? Like, is this an unreliable business? You get bad reviews. Like, maybe it doesn't matter to you because you're trying to close shop. But at the same time, it's just kind of a not nice thing to do. So letting people know, sending an email, just letting them know things are closing down. It's been a great run. You had a good time. You love them. And, you know, it's very, very nice for you to give them a recommendation to someone who does something similar to what you're doing, so that they now have a new service provider to go to or something like that. So I saw somebody, they decided to close their business recently, and I got an email like this from them, and it was great because at the end she closed with, and if you are still looking for this service, a comparable offering is available at, and she gave a website, which I thought was awesome. So now people still love you. They still know you. It's a very small industry, this creative world we live in. And they, you know, if you decide to come back or you decide to do something different, or, you know, you're closing your business so you can focus on something else in the industry, you haven't left a bad taste in anyone's mouth. But like legally speaking, there's really not much you have to do. You can let your secretary of state or your state registrar with your LLC know. You should probably let your accountant know so that he can file a final tax return for you, or you're filing your final tax return. But otherwise, there's just really not that much that you have to do to close your business from a legal standpoint. It will kind of naturally take care of itself as things lapse and expire and you're not paying your annual service fees or your domain registration or except, you know, those kinds of things. So that's closing a business. Do you have any like follow-up?
That's awesome. I mean, when I closed my wedding planning business, that was basically what happened. I contacted my state and I was like, what do I have to do to like not renew my business license or my, I don't know what it was called. I think it was called a business license in Maryland, but they were like, you don't need to do anything. You just don't pay next year. And I was like, okay, there's not like a I'm done contract or like I'm done like piece of paper. She was like, nope, that's it. So that was really interesting. Whereas like where I was in Virginia and then we transferred it to California, we did have to shut it down to let them know that California was kind of taking over. So that was really interesting. But yeah, I don't have any specific questions about that. And I think it's really interesting to think about like what your exit plan could be. And like, it doesn't mean that just because you have to close or pause or like temporary shut it down or whatever means that your business was a failure necessarily. It just means that in this next season of your life, it's not going to work. And so, you know, whenever you need to stop something or it's whatever you're doing right now isn't the primary focus, like Christina said, I think it's like a just true sign of you being a business owner to say to your community that you've built, the audience that you've built, to say like, this is what's happening and thank you for being part of this journey with us.
Yeah. I mean, it takes 5 seconds and I know it can be kind of hard, especially if this is a really emotional decision, but yeah, I think people deserve that. So that's all I have to say about closing the business. But as far as like getting it ready, if you are just ready to exit and you don't necessarily want to close it, but you want to sell it, like I said, you can use those websites to start getting it up and running. What they are going to be looking for is your annual revenue and your annual profits. And so obviously the more profitable you've been, the more likely it is to sell. They're also going to be looking for how much owner involvement there's been. So if you can start to remove yourself as much as possible while keeping profits up, right? Like this is the paradox that everybody seems to struggle with anyways. But if you can do that as much as possible before the exit, before you try to sell it, you know, it's like getting a house ready for sale. You want to stage the house, you want to get it nice and ready, you know, maybe paint the front door, stain the back deck, like those kinds of things. So you're investing a little bit of capital and cash up front, but hopefully that pays off later because people are like, oh my gosh, this back deck is awesome for parties. And they can really see themselves in it just like that. You could be doing the same thing with your business where you're starting to remove yourself as much as possible so that people aren't wary to purchase it, right? Because if it's like a very owner-dependent business, then and the owner leaves, like that's so, for example, if you're building like a personal brand or like a one-on-one coaching services business, these are not ideal to sell. However, if you're able to add some kind of like more passive income stream or maybe like digital download products, things like that, where it doesn't necessarily have to be the owner that's creating and running those things, then it's a much more likely candidate of a business to sell. So you can do things like that. The other thing is what we talked about earlier. It comes back to your intellectual property. So the last thing people are going to be, I mean, obviously there's more than this, but the last main thing people are going to be looking for as they purchase a business is what kind of intellectual property it has. And it always cracks me up because if you ever watch Shark Tank, they always ask what kind of patents and trademarks people have. Well, a pending patent is basically worthless. But, you know, they always say, oh, yeah, that's nice. You have a pending patent. It's like, it's so worthless until it actually issues registration. Same thing with a trademark or anything like that, you know. So if you have a registration in hand, that's something that you have to think about 9 to 12 months in advance, because that's about how long it takes to get a registration. So you want to make sure that if you do have a decent site, you know, maybe it's not your be-all, end-all business or career, but it could be someone else's, that maybe you're applying for a trademark registration and you're registering the copyrights to the digital download products that you sell or the courses that you sell, that kind of thing, so that somebody has the ability to continue to operate this business once you sell it using, you know, flippa.com or what was the other one that Kurt recommended? It was exchangemarketplace.com.
Another thing too that I want to mention that increases the value as you look to sell your company is your systems. Like Christina was saying, the removal of you as an owner and like your, what's in your brain is part of your intellectual property, and documenting those systems, having some kind of SOP, standard operating procedures for how things operate in your business is another way to increase the value. So just another thing to think about.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's so funny because like standard operating procedures, SOPs or systems are like things that people are like, yeah, I know I need to do that. I need to do that. But like they could save you so much time once they're in place. They save you so much money if you decide to get business insurance because you can show that you have processes for things. And if you ever decide to exit your business and sell it to someone else, I mean, for you to turn around and be able to say, oh, when someone emails you, this, this, and this, and this has to happen. Every week, we put out a blog and this and this blah, 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 is how it's distributed. Like that is so valuable for someone coming in that you're much more likely to end up with a sale of the business to help recoup some of the investment that you've made in it.
Boom. So there it is. We have talked all about how to negotiate some of these difficult legal challenges that might come up in your business. We've also talked about trademarks and how to possibly exit your company if you choose to do so. Thanks, Christina, for answering all of my random-ish questions. But I think that these are all things that at some point you're going to be thinking about or are, you know, confronted by in your business. Hopefully not, but sometimes they do happen. So know that you have legal, you know, people you can talk to and hopefully somebody you can trust in order to help protect you in your business. So everyone out there, go build your creative empire.
Are you ready to build your own empire? For more information, show notes, downloads, and tips on how to do it, head to www.creativeempire.co, where you can find out more about this week's episode and the two lovely ladies behind it all, encouraging you to build your own creative empire. If you enjoyed this week's show, it would mean so much to Raina and Christina if you could take 2 minutes to go to iTunes and leave a review. It's a little thing that makes a big difference for the show.